From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, June 12th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
The Republican and Democratic ballots are now set in this fall's elections for Congress and the State House. But Tuesday's primary election saw extremely low voter participation across Maine. Maine Public State House correspondent Kevin Miller joins us to talk about Tuesday's primaries and what the outcomes might mean for November. Kevin, let's start quickly by talking about that low turnout. Why was there such little interest?
Well, I suspect the biggest reason is there were just so few competitive primaries. And just to help illustrate that, there are 186 seats in the Maine legislature, but there are only 17 primaries, either Republican or Democratic, for those seats. In every other race, it's already only one Republican and one Democrat, or in some cases, there's only one candidate running in the fall. We also just had a presidential primary in March. That was pretty sparsely attended as well. There were some towns that had decent turnout if they had a contentious debate over, say, a school budget or a local referendum. But I think what really struck me last night was I stopped by Bangor's only polling location between 6:30 and 7, and that's typically a pretty busy time. And the arena floor of the Cross Insurance Center was just completely empty, except for poll workers and just a few voters. And here's what Bangor City Clerk Lisa Goodwin told me then.
So we'll probably be a little over 1,000 voters in person today, and then we get another 500 or so absentee. You know, on a larger election, you're talking like in November it'll be 18,000 voters. So this is like nothing to us.
And Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bella said she heard pretty similar comments from clerks around the state.
Now, we did have some important races on Tuesday. Let's start with one that has potentially big implications for this fall. That's the Republican primary in Maine's 2nd Congressional District. What happened there?
The winner was Austin Terrio, who is a former NASCAR driver who is now serving his first term in the legislature. Yeah, I guess, you know, over the past few months, it was clear that Terrio had some sizable advantages over his primary opponent, Mike Sobleski, who is also a state legislator. But Terry had a lot more money. He had support from big-name Republicans like Donald Trump. And that's definitely what played out on Tuesday. Terry won with 2/3 of the vote. And that's despite what I would say was a pretty aggressive grassroots ground game by Mike Sobolewski. So what this means now for the fall is we have a young former NASCAR driver running against a young Marine, and that's Jared Golden, the Democratic incumbent, in a pretty unpredictable swing district that has a lot of veterans and I'd say probably a good number of NASCAR fans.
And what do you think Terrio's win means for the general election?
The 2nd District frequently draws a lot of national money and attention, even in years when I'd say the candidate matchup is less interesting than it is this year. That's pretty much inevitable this time around. Terrio, he raised well over $1 million headed into the primary, and he did that with the help of some big-name endorsements from Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson and then the campaign arm of the House Republicans in D.C. What will be interesting to watch is how Austin portrays himself in the general election and how much he talks about his support for President Trump. Trump won the district in 2016 and 2020, but those legal troubles that he's having now could hurt him with those all-important independents and moderate Republicans in the 2nd District.
And how about Congressman Golden? Does this change how he campaigns headed into the fall?
Yeah, so Jared Golden is a notoriously hard guy to predict. He kind of does his own thing, and that doesn't always go over well with the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party because he's voted against Democratic spending packages and gun control proposals, and then he's backed some initiatives that Republicans put forward. But I'd say we should fully expect that Terrio and Republicans are going to portray Representative Golden as not a moderate and as part of this liberal Democratic machine in D.C. that's led by Joe Biden. And Terrio actually hinted at this during his speech to supporters in Bangor Tuesday night.
One of the first things that happens when you get elected to Congress is you make a vote for the Speaker of the House. The question I have to ask us is, do we want Jared Golden representing our district for another 2 years, electing a very liberal, progressive Speaker of the House, knowing that the agenda that those people are going to push across are detrimental to the 2nd District. We cannot afford that.
And this wasn't the only congressional primary on the ballot. What happened in the 1st District?
Yeah, that was a pretty low-key race, but in the end, Ron Russell of Kennebunkport beat Andrew Piantedosi of Cape Elizabeth for the Republican nomination. Mr. Russell is retired from a career in the Army, where he was part of the Airborne Rangers. He's a Maine native and has a lot of business experience, in addition to his decades in the military. But, you know, I think the reality is that every Republican candidate has had a tough time making any headway against Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree over the past decade and a half. And that's just because, unlike the 2nd District, the 1st District clearly leans to the left, and that doesn't seem to be changing much, so...
Kevin, let's talk a little bit about some of the state house races as well. The most interesting race, it seems, was in Waterville, where abortion was a real key issue in the Democratic primary.
Yeah, this was unusual because ever since the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade 2 years ago, Democrats in Maine and around the country have made abortion a major platform against Republicans. But this was a Democratic primary where Planned Parenthood's political arm really came out strongly against the sitting Democratic incumbent, which is Representative Bruce White in this Waterville district. And that was because he voted against several high-profile bills that Planned Parenthood and other abortion rights groups supported. And in the end, White lost to Cassie Julia, who said she got into the race because of the incumbent's positions on abortion.
And as you mentioned, there weren't a lot of primaries for state house seats. What other races were you watching?
Well, so Democrats in Portland nominated a Somali immigrant, Yusuf Yusuf, to run for the House seat that's being vacated by House Speaker Rachel Talbot Ross. This was actually supposed to be a three-way primary, but literally the day before the election, longtime state lawmaker Ben Chipman withdrew from the race. And then Yusuf ended up beating another former lawmaker, Herb Adams, to win the nomination. And then just a few miles away in Cape Elizabeth, Democrats chose a relative political newcomer, Michelle Boyer, over two former state lawmakers for a House seat there.
And that's Maine Public State House correspondent Kevin Miller. You can read more of his reporting on our website, mainepublic.org. Meanwhile, the rising cost of education led a number of Maine communities, including Lewiston, Westbrook, and Oxford Hills, to vote down their local school budgets on Tuesday. Steve Bailey, the executive director of the Maine School Management Association, says he can't remember a year in which so many budgets were rejected. Bailey says many districts struggled to keep budget increases below 10% this year, and schools also faced the expiration of federal COVID relief money that had funded many new positions.
People had been kind of anticipating, well, what's the cliff going to be like, you know, when the federal money goes away? So this was the year that people were dreading in terms of both preparing a budget and getting a budget, you know, past the voters.
In Lewiston, school officials say they may look at cutting some positions previously funded by COVID relief money and may also consider reducing after-school programming. The Environmental Protection Agency has reached a settlement with the Central Maine and Quebec Railway Company for violating the Clean Water Act following two derailments that resulted in oil spills. The derailments occurred in the town of LaGrange and in northern Somerset County in 2022 and 2023. They resulted in nearly 15,000 gallons of oil being spilled into nearby waterways, according to the EPA, which also says the environmental and emergency response costs in both cases will be paid by the company. Under the settlement, the company paid a penalty of more than $16,000 and will also be required to purchase emergency response equipment, including an off-road vehicle, for the fire department that responded to the Somerset County spill near Moosehead Lake. The EPA says both derailments were caused by floodwaters eroding the railroad track beds. The state of Maine says that after months of analysis, it's decided that Sears Island, near the town of Searsport, should be the site of a proposed terminal to support a floating offshore wind project. State transportation officials are now pursuing almost $500 million in federal grant funding for the construction of a port facility and semi-submersible barge. But a private entity, Sprague Energy, is trying to make the case that its property at nearby Mack Point is a better site for the project. And the company hosted tours of its terminal earlier this week. Nicola Grisco was there.
At Sprague Energy's launch pad, two cranes slowly lift a 240-foot-long wind turbine blade into the air. The blades were manufactured in India and shipped to Sprague's Mack Point terminal, arriving the night before. They're being offloaded and carefully placed into massive truck beds. And with a captive audience of journalists and others surrounding him, Sprague Vice President Jim Terrio says these blades are bound for onshore wind farms under construction down east and in western Maine.
These truck drivers either back in or drive in and back out, depending on which piece they're taking off of the dock, because there's no room to turn on the dock. So they're good truck drivers.
Terrio says this terminal on Mack Point in Searsport has become the exclusive handling port for most onshore wind projects in northern New England. But now that Maine is vying to become the East Coast destination for a nascent floating onshore wind industry, Sprague wants to be part of the conversation. The company developed a new plan last spring that it believes shows how the Mack Point terminal could be repurposed to accommodate a port facility. And Terrio says the plan addresses the concerns that the state had previously raised about the site.
The reality is there's only a few places that are vegetation on our plan versus the plan over there. So on land, it's mostly in-service industrial land that doesn't require any additional permitting. The only permitting is that there'll have to be a permit for the dredge.
Terrio says under Sprague's new plan, dredging requirements have been reduced by 85%. The state, however, says that its Sears Island property would require just 25,000 cubic yards of dredging, to Mack Point's roughly 60,000 cubic yards. Terrio says that if the state did decide to choose Mack Point, it would apply for federal grant funding just as it had for Sears Island. Sprague would lease the property to the state. The wind port would have a dedicated gate entrance at the Mack Point terminal, and the state would choose a contractor to operate the port.
So for us, we look at it as we're giving up almost half of our terminal and the future capabilities of that in exchange for some guaranteed lease payments for a period of time.
After all, Terrio says there are already signs that the industry is changing, pivoting away from onshore wind to offshore, where there's the potential to generate more renewable energy.
We've got projects in the hoppers through about 28, 29. We've heard nothing for any new projects after that.
Sprague CEO David Glendon says the company just wants the state to take its alternative plan at Mack Point seriously.
And we think it has some real advantages over Sears Island. So we're hopeful that we'll get an honest assessment out of the state. We think, you know, candidly, events like this will, at least in theory, generate some pressure on the state to consider those alternatives.
State transportation officials say they have considered the new Mack Point plan and believe the Sears Island concept is better. They argue that at Sears Island, floating offshore wind turbines could be constructed, assembled, and launched simultaneously. Still, Maine DOT must prepare a formal analysis of alternative wind port sites. The analysis, which should become public later this summer, will include Mack Point, and the project must go through a lengthy permitting process. Sprague officials say they hope that the state and federal environmental regulators reviewing the project will at least see Mack Point as a compelling alternative. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicola Grisco.
Maine will open 50 new electric vehicle chargers in 17 stations throughout the state over the next year. Nick Song has more.
Each location will offer Level 3 fast chargers, the fastest class of EV charging available, with the ability to charge a car between 30 and 90 minutes. Michael Stoddard, Executive Director for Efficiency Maine, says installing these charging stations is an important step, especially in rural areas, in the effort to convince Mainers to make the switch to electric vehicles.
So whether they are in the market for a car in 2024 or several years from now, we want them to look at the map and say, this is going to be fine. There's enough public chargers around this state that if I need a recharge in the course of a long trip, I will be able to reach one of these places and get the charge that I need.
Maine's EV network currently has over 1,000 chargers across some 500 locations. Stoddard says he expects these new stations to be in operation by next summer. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nick Song.
The Rue Institute has secured the first of several major approvals needed to build a new campus on the site of a former baked bean factory in Portland. The city's planning board approved a site plan with several conditions designed to alleviate traffic concerns. The plans call for the construction of a new graduate school building, research center, childcare facility, and parking garage with more than 600 spaces. Dozens of residents spoke about the plan at a meeting on Tuesday night. Most were supportive, but many, including planning board member David Silk, say they're concerned that the neighborhood will be overrun with traffic.
This parking garage is so big, and if it wasn't so big, there wouldn't be the incentive for people to drive onto the site. There'd be more of an incentive for people really to walk or take a bike or take Metro.
New pedestrian and bike paths along the waterfront would connect the new campus under Tukey's Bridge and to the Back Cove Trail. The project still needs permits from the Maine Department of Transportation, among others. The new campus is expected to open in 2027. And a new task force to support dairy farms in Maine met for the first time on Wednesday to come up with recommendations on how the state can best invest in the struggling sector. A third of Maine's dairy farms have shut down in the last 4 years, many citing high costs and low returns. Farmers say state lawmakers must better understand the challenges facing the dairy industry and its important place in the food system and Maine economy. Jenny Tilton Flood is a member of Flood Brothers Farm in Clinton.
I think that if we remember that this is all an investment in Maine, an investment in our food system, our food security, our communities, our economy and environment, I think that it might be easier to be able to say, yes, this investment is good for us, as opposed to this line item is too big.
The panel will consider questions such as whether farmers could have their own processing operation, allowing them to bypass commercial plants. The task force will present its recommendations to the legislature by January. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Thursday morning, we'll talk with columnist David Ignatius on his perspective on global events and foreign affairs. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thank you for listening.